Have you been wandering through life with no purpose? Are you looking for a catalyst to change your life for the better? These Servant Leadership podcasts will change your perspective of yourself, others, and your creator. This transformational leadership approach uses seven simple tools to help you understand your purpose in life. Please join Dave Kuhnert and Chris Seegers for today's podcast.
Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
Doing great. Really excited about this one today. It's really a great tool to help us figure out our current reality. But before we dive into it, let's just back up a minute and look at where we've come from. We started off really just saying that the structure for life is simply there, here, path. You have some place you're trying to go, some place you currently are, and a path that links the two together. So we want to be very clear about where we're trying to go. So we have to have clarity of our there. And then we want to be true to our current reality of where we are. So we want to have current reality in where our here is. And then the path that links the two together, we need to act, learn, adjust along that path. And, of course, be committed to get to our there. And then we said servant leadership is just influencing others to get there. So we want to have a there we're trying to get to, or to get others to, and we're just going to influence them either through our own actions or through one of our forms of influence that we talked about a couple episodes ago. So influencing others to get there. And as we set goals or milestones to help us get there that kind of light that path, we have to be very vigilant for the other there. So our transcendent there, as we came up with that, of serve others to the glory of God, or well done, good and faithful servant, whatever our purpose is in this world and this life, that following God's example or Christ's example to get us there, that we also have to be careful because the me there is going to be just looming off in the distance. Two sides of the same heart, so to speak. So even though we have a good transcendent there that's about serving others and worshiping God or fearing God, obeying God, there's always going to be the there that is selfish, the flesh, that's going to try to invite us in and trick us into serving ourselves instead of serving others. We all want to be great. We all want to do what's best for me. But the reality is that being great or doing what's best for me is simply doing what's best for others. We have to constantly inundate ourselves with that and remind ourselves of that and put structures in place to keep us from drifting to our me there instead of focusing on our we there. And then we talked about once we have that transcendent there and know our purpose in life, the meaning of our life, leveraging our spiritual gifts to help others, to influence them to get there, that we have to understand our current reality. So the rest of what we talk about in our podcast going forward is mostly about current reality and knowing that truth is an acquired taste. And people typically don't want to know their current reality because we think we're usually better at something than we really are.
Why do you think it's so important to understand your current reality?
Well, if you just think of any place you're trying to get to, if I have somewhere I'm trying to go, a there, and then knowing where I currently am is really important to get there. If I think I'm somewhere other than I am, it's going to be a tough road to get there. Think of a mall map. Say you walked into the mall here in Midland, Texas, and you walk in, you're in the food court with the big map that says you are here with a star on it. You can choose to believe that or not, but if I'm trying to get to JCPenney's and I think I'm in Sears and I'm actually in the food court, the path to get there is going to be so much more tumultuous. It's going to be way more difficult to get to my there of JCPenney's than it would be otherwise. So really knowing where you are, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, financially, is really critical to helping us get there. So we talked about our five forms of influence to help us influence others and knowing that those types of power are in the eye of the beholder. So if they believe I have that power with them, then I do and I can influence them better. And we want to gain influence to serve others, not to lord it over them. So we had all these different types of influence that are about getting them there. And then we had our five leadership styles we talked about using that influence for. And that's kind of where we ended our last episode with, was talking about the leadership styles and how transformational leadership is really critical. And then if we're transformational, it means we're being clear about our there. It means we are being real in our current reality, supported by facts. And when there is a gap between that current reality or that clarity, we share truth and help influence others to get there. So that was our first HEAR tool. It was all about power and leadership styles. Our second HEAR tool, current reality tool, is we're going to call the Freedom V. Today we're going to talk about freedom versus control, two sides of the same coin. Freedom is really important. We all want to be free. We're born with this innate desire to be free. We don't want to be controlled. When people try to control us, what do we typically do?
Typically backlash or react negatively and do the opposite.
Yeah, when people try to control us, we rebel. We push back. Anybody that's ever tried to control their spouse, they've seen that happen. Anybody that's tried to control others at all, we've seen that happen. There are over 7 billion people on this planet. We get to control one of them. So right now, though, instead of talking about control, let's talk about how to give freedom. And freedom is all about choice. And freedom is all about being responsible with the freedom that we have. So we want to be committed to our there and understanding our current reality and where we are and how we self-govern ourselves to control ourselves instead of letting others have to think that they need to control us. Instead of controlling others, we want to hope, pray, and encourage that they do well, and when necessary, exhort and rebuke. This helps provide a structure for them to work towards what we're going to call self-governance. In the military, we call it self-discipline, really the same thing. The structure for this is the Freedom V. So the Freedom V, if you just think of the letter V, big old capital V, is what we're going to picture in our minds for that. And that V is going to be red, because those boundaries that we create with the V are created with clear expectations and clear consequences. So when we give people structure, structure demands behavior. When we talked about helping keep ourselves focused on our we there, our transformational there, their transcendent there, we talked about providing structure for ourselves because structure demands behavior. So that might be listening to the Christian radio station instead of the country station, or it may be putting a structure in place in our company where the physical structure is a pyramid where the boss is at the top and the lowest level at the bottom. The mental model of it is the upside-down triangle, the upside-down pyramid, where the boss serves everyone in the organization. Those are structures. They demand a behavior. The door coming into the room is a structure for the room. It demands a behavior that you go through the doorway instead of coming through the ceiling or breaking through the wall. The chair you sit in is a structure that demands that you sit in it the proper way instead of trying to sit in it in a different way. You still have that choice, but there's a consequence for trying to sit on top of the chair and you fall down. So we use clear expectations and clear consequences to create this V. So when we think of the Freedom V, in the very bottom of the Freedom V would be where you have the most structure around someone, where you give them the most clear expectations and very clear guidelines and very clear consequences that they need a little bit more help than somebody who's further out in the V. They don't need as strict of guidelines or as strict of consequences and expectations to help them stay in the V. A good way to think about this is raising children. If you've ever had a child or you know a child or ever were a child, you've probably seen this used in some manner or fashion. So when you have a small child, you start them off in the confines low in the Freedom V. In other words, they have very strict behaviors we expect from them. This is what time you get up. This is what time you go to sleep. This is what time you eat. This is what time you play. Everything has a time, and there's a lot of really close structure around that particular child. And as they demonstrate that they are mature enough, you move them out in the Freedom V. The boundaries aren't as close. So at 5 years old, it may be if you clean your room, you get to stay up for an extra hour. You get more freedom. And if they choose poorly and choose to violate the Freedom V, there's consequences involved. You didn't clean your room. It may be a spanking. It may be a timeout, whatever it is. That V is created with expectations and consequences. It is still the child's choice whether they decide to step across that boundary and violate the expectations. If they do, they suffer the consequences. But as they grow older, eventually they're 16 or 17 years old and they have the car keys, be home by 10 o'clock. If they choose to come home at 11 o'clock, there's consequences. They could lose the car. They could be grounded. We just move them back in the Freedom V where there's a little more structure around them. So if you can imagine moving your child up and down inside this V based on the level of self-governance that they demonstrate. So what is self-governance would be the next appropriate question. And really what self-governance is, Chris, is when we limit our own freedom so others don't have to. We micromanage ourselves so we don't have to be micromanaged. People who are self-governed, we put way out in the freedom V, whether it's an employee or a child, young adult, whatever it may be, those people have their own freedom V within the V. So if you picture the letter V and inside of it a smaller V, somebody who's self-governed provides themselves a lot of structure in their own life or their own job or their own particular task that they're working on. And those are the people that you want to give a lot more freedom to because they're handling the freedom they have responsibly. They are controlling themselves. They are micromanaging themselves and governing their own freedom and their own choices so others don't have to. Really a great tool to use if you think about raising your kids, if you've never done this, where are they at in the freedom? And just sitting down with them. Here's the expectation and here's the consequence. If you choose to violate this bedtime or this curfew, this is what will happen to you. You're very clear about it. And we can see this in Scripture, right? I mean, we saw this with Adam and Eve in Genesis. Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17 says, "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it you shall surely die." God's laying out the clear expectation. You can eat anything you want to, but you can't eat from this one tree. And if you do, the consequence will be you'll surely die. Adam and Eve still had a choice. They chose to violate the confines of the Freedom V. They stepped across that boundary and suffered the consequences that we still suffer today with the fall.
Great companies will use this Freedom V well, and poor companies will use it poorly. And on the company side, you'll see companies that don't move you up in the Freedom V quick enough, right? When you're already self-governed, and then those employees typically go somewhere else that's going to reward, give them more freedom because they are self-governed. And then kind of on the flip side too, you see some companies that just throw the employees in the pond and expect them to swim first day. And so when you're given too much freedom, it can be damaging as well.
For sure. So when you have a new employee or somebody who's moved into a new job, they need more structure. You're not hurting them by providing structure. You're not punishing someone with this tool. You punish yourself by violating the boundaries. So if you have somebody who's new to a job or new to a position, new to a company, and you throw them way out in the Freedom V and say, go figure it out, man, that's tough on that person. Typically, they flounder and fail. So too much freedom is a bad thing. Too little freedom is a bad thing. We want to give people as much freedom as they can handle, but not more. When they've demonstrated that, hey, they can handle more, or they look like they might be able to handle more, give them the benefit of the doubt and throw them out there. And they may surprise you. They may have more in them than you actually give them credit for. So from a business standpoint, when you look at this and you say, hey, one of the rules at my company is I need to be to work at 8 o'clock every day. Well, if I'm self-governed, I don't use the 8 o'clock boundary for my boundary. That's the company boundary. If I consistently violate that boundary, I might get in trouble. I might get fired. I might lose my job. But if I use my own freedom V within the V, maybe I give myself enough structure that I have to be there by 7:50 every day. I'm not ever late because I put that structure in place for myself. Nobody has to worry about you being on time. And this is true with any project. If you're given a deadline, hey, my own structure within the structure would say, I'm going to get it done early. And this is the structure I put in place for that. And that becomes the norm for you. It becomes a habit. You just constantly put structures in place so that other people don't have to.
And I think you kind of communicate that this applies to the pillars that we discuss a lot. I mean, the self-governance, whether it be spiritual life, whether it be at the workplace, whether it be in your finances, you see people who are self-governed and they do incredibly well. Because they've achieved more freedom by being self-governed, whereas people who can't are typically struggling because they haven't governed their finances, so their finances are governing there, and you know, as well as the other pillars.
Great point, Chris. Yeah, And we're typically never self-governed in all areas of our lives. It's almost a transcendent thing. It's one of those things where you wouldn't say, hey, I'm self-governed today, and my physical pillar, I did everything I could, my financial and social and mental and emotional pillar, I'm good to go. I'm self-governed. It's one of those things we're always shooting for. It's one of those things we're always moving towards. And every day is a new day. Some days we're better at it than others. But ultimately, when we choose to violate that freedom, you can even look at it from point of view of the law, our country, the rules that we've been given by the government. I can choose to drive 55 in a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit zone and be self-governed by staying under the speed limit, or I can choose to violate the freedom I'm given to drive that car at that speed limit, and I can go 65. But if I do that, there could be a consequence involved. I'm stepping across a boundary that's been given to me by the law of our city or state or country, and I'm choosing to violate that structure. Well, there's a consequence potentially involved in that, which would be a speeding ticket or even jail time. So there's a lot of things we're allowed to do that maybe we even shouldn't do. And we see this a lot. Paul talks about this in Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 6:12 says, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And then it's important enough that he talks about it again in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23. He says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. So Paul's telling us that just because some things are legal doesn't make them good for us, doesn't mean we should do them, doesn't mean it's beneficial for us to do them. Just because the law allows it doesn't make it helpful for us. So the freedom V that we create within the V is really helpful to keep us, to prevent us, that structure that demands the behavior, to prevent us from doing something that may not be walking the way God would want us to walk. So just because the law says it's okay doesn't mean that's what I want to do. God gave us a freedom V as well. We saw it with Adam and Eve. We see it in our own lives. There's things that we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be pursuing Christ. And when we choose not to, there's a consequence for that. We may not see it today, but we will see it eventually. So, you know, if you look at this, even from the child-rearing standpoint again, a lot of times you see this freedom V upside down. When children are very little, they're allowed to do anything they want to do. And those children, you see them running crazy in the restaurant or in the supermarket, or the parents just don't put any structure around them. And as they get older, the parent starts to see that, hey, little Johnny, he's on a terrible trajectory. He's going to be an axe murderer here in a few more years if I don't clamp down on him. So the natural response then is to try to control little Johnny. And of course, that just makes it worse. Little Johnny will then rebel. So when raising children this way, we want to start them off right. Start them off with a lot of structure, very limited freedom. They don't know how to be self-governed. We have to teach them that. When children enter this world, they're separated from God. They have to be taught how to love. They have to be taught how to share. They have to be taught how to give and serve. We have to teach them that as parents. The great tool to do that is this freedom V. A lot of clear expectations and a lot of very clear consequences. And of course, those consequences and expectations, we build those with coercive power and with position power. So as a parent, your position power puts you in that position to be able to create the structure. And if they violate that structure, well, the coercive power comes into play, that fear of consequence that they should have. As long as you follow through, you'll gain more coercive power. We talked about that in a couple episodes ago, how important that coercive power is, especially initially in child rearing. The fear of consequence helps keep that child in the freedom V. Now, we don't want them to only do what's right because of fear of consequence. Eventually, we want them to be transformational. But initially, that coercive power creates the freedom V. It's the same with an employee at work or even with the law. At work, you can do so many things, but if you use drugs and during the urinalysis you come back as hot, well, you are going to suffer the consequences under the law. You'll be terminated from employment. That's the V the company has. And what the law has, you could be prosecuted under the law in a lot of states. Now, maybe not true in all states anymore.
We talk quite a bit about measuring small and measuring often. And I think that example of children with an upside-down Freedom V is a lack of measuring small and often. And the same with employees or whatever situation, your finances. If you're not kind of providing a constant feedback loop, then that's when you get to those really drastic situations where you have to clamp down and usually there's a rebellion.
Yeah.
Versus with kids, if you constantly provide feedback, say, hey, this is acceptable or this isn't, you never get to that point where you're like, man, my kid's going to be an axe murderer.
Yeah, it's about being intentional. Intentional as a parent, intentional as an employer, and using that position power, using that coercive power to create the structure of the V, and then using reward, expert, and referent power to keep them in the V. Because you're, more than anything, you're an example. You're influencing others to get there through your personal example. When you demonstrate self-governance, others can see how to be self-governed. So when I go out every day and show up early, and I leave late, and I work hard, and I'm transformational, something different about you. What is it? How do I be like that? I can see the habits of that person. And through my reward, expert, and referent power, that will help create a structure for people to stay in the V on their own and help you share the tool of providing structure within the structure. It helps keep honest people honest. It's like a lock on a door. A lock on a door doesn't keep a criminal out. What it does is it keeps honest people honest. It's a structure. They're less likely to go in there and do something they shouldn't be doing. When we put that lock on our own door, we're creating our own structure to prevent us from doing that.
And I think in those pillars, like you said, you're never going to be fully self-governed. But when you're not self-governed in an area, it really takes away your referent power. And just a kind of a superficial example is you see a lot of brilliant, you know, people in the tech industry that may come into a meeting and they're just so poorly dressed. And that's just one facet of your physical pillar, but they've decided that they're not going to be self-governed in that facet. And I think it really kind of demonstrates, man, is that somebody who I really want to be behind? Is that someone who I want to lead me? And like I said, it's just superficial, but each of those pillars, you know, can either add or take away your referent power.
Yeah, good point, for sure. You see this all the time. So let's look at our leadership styles in the Freedom V as well. If you're using the directive leadership style, that means you're giving the there, here, and path. Well, that means somebody's way down in the Freedom V. They're tight in the Freedom V. They need a lot of structure. Directive is not bad. It's just not very developmental. But with a small child or a new employee or safety is involved, you're going to provide more structure. You're going to be more directive. If they're showing that they handle that well and they've learned a little bit, we can move out in the Freedom V a little more, and that's where you are if you're transactional. Maybe the boundaries of the Freedom V have opened up as you move just one more step out in the V. And then as you take another step out, that's where you'd be if you're using participative leadership style, showing the there, here, and path, a lot of expert power, and keeping them in the V that way with that structure. Take another step out in the Freedom V, and now you're delegating. You're using the delegative leadership style. This is where you've given them the there, and they find the path. This is going to, you know, use a lot of expert power. A lot of clarity is going to have to be there to help them see the there, but it's less structured. They've demonstrated that they can do more on their own, so we give them more freedom. Finally, you take another step out, all the way out in the Freedom V, and it's transformational. We have a shared there, here, and path. We know they're going to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. We want to give that person as much freedom as they want, as much freedom as we can, because there's no doubt of why they're doing it. It's not making life about me. It's making life about others. And this is a lot of referent power. They're demonstrating that referent power through transformational leadership, and people want to be like them. When you get some transformational leaders in your organization, it changes everything. You've got a role model now. You've got somebody that everybody wants to be like. It's pretty phenomenal and really influence others to get there as well. A good litmus test, if you have the right structures in place, if you have clarity of the expectations and clarity of the consequences, if you have all that in place, you can tell based on the number of orders you have to give every day. If you're somebody who's got to constantly be giving orders all the time, you're probably missing a structure. You're probably missing some kind of a policy or a rule or a standard operating procedure that prevents them from doing the right thing. And if you're somebody that people have to come and always ask for more clarity from, it's probably you're not communicating very well the expectations and consequences with enough clarity, or you're trying to control too much.
So in the Freedom V, the failure could be on both sides. You could have an employee that's taking advantage of the system, but you could also have a leader that just hasn't kind of clarified the expectations. So what do you do when the Freedom V is violated? How do you kind of approach that situation?
Of course, it would depend on how well the expectation and consequence were understood. If it's a law, it's a law. Everybody should understand the law. Being incompetent or not knowing, negligent and not knowing the law is not an excuse. If you went out and got drunk and drove a company vehicle, obviously the consequence, there's no choice in that matter. But if you are somebody who's new and you showed up a few minutes late and they violate the Freedom V, maybe it's just a reminder of what the expectation actually is. But just constantly measure small, measure often. If we keep those little things from becoming big things, we can handle it a whole lot easier. When you're looking at freedom and things aren't going well, somebody violates that structure, the tendency is the desire to want to control others. And we look back at Adam and Eve, did they have a choice? Absolutely, they had a choice. We cannot control others. We cannot control our employees. We cannot control our spouses. We cannot control our children. Now, that's usually pretty contentious when you say, what do you mean I can't control my kids? I'll just put more structure around them. I'll just put them in a place where they don't have a choice but to do anything. And it's funny that we think that way. I mean, Viktor Frankl, we talked a lot about him in here. Again, he's that Austrian neurologist and psychologist that spent 3 years in a concentration camp. Viktor Frankl said, "The one thing you can't take away from me is the way I choose to respond to what you do to me. The last of one's freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given circumstance." He's in a concentration camp. He's behind barbed wire, walking that thin line between life and death every day. He had a choice every day. The ultimate choice, to live or die. He had a choice in everything that he did or chose not to do. So do your children. If they're being terrible little children, you throw them in the room and no supper, no dinner, spankings, all, they still have a choice. You can physically restrain them, but in their little minds, they can still choose to think the way they want to choose. Viktor Frankl still had a choice to think the way he wanted to, although he was restrained and although he was in the worst of probably any circumstance we could ever find ourselves in, they still have a choice. In fact, one of the great paradoxes of life is if we want more influence with others, we have to give up control. Now, that sounds counterintuitive to most people. It's this great dichotomy. When you try to control others, they rebel. We just talked about that. When you try to force them to do something, they're going to resist. However, when you make it their idea, let them have the appropriate amount of autonomy and make them responsible for it, they'll be much more invested in whatever you're trying to accomplish.
It really broadens your reach, too. If you can get to a point of that leadership where you can give up your control, you're enabling other people, right, to have a wider sphere of influence. So all of a sudden, what you could have done is multiplied by the actions of those people.
Yeah, you're multiplying yourself. You're providing yourself more time to do other things, whether it's as a parent or as an employer. You're really creating more of you. You're giving yourself the ability to multiply what you're doing on a grand scale. And it really is a phenomenal thing when you do this, because doors open up to influence those people even more. When they know that you care enough about them to give them the freedom to do something, that you're giving them the choices to make, that they're invested in, they're going to surprise you. They're going to do great things with it. And they're going to come to you for help instead of you trying to control them. And when you try to control them, a couple different things can happen. Number one, they may decide, hey, I don't want to be around him because I feel micromanaged, or they're going to be dependent on you. Now, dependency can be good for our ego, but it's not going to promote growth in others that we're trying to serve. We're trying to grow them up. We're trying to make them better employees, responsible adults at some point in their life, if it's our children. So we want to continue to help them make decisions, but not make the decisions for them all the time. When we don't try to control others, they end up more than likely coming back to us for advice and help, and you have more influence when you give up this control. So this great dichotomy is, if I want to have more influence with others, I need to give up control. Quit trying to control other people.
I had some meetings with employees over the weekend, and this same example came up. I had given one of our employees quite a bit of freedom because I trust them, and they're doing a great job. So he had come back and said, hey, Chris, I appreciate the freedom, but I need some clarity on this certain facet of it. So like you said, when there's the mutual respect and self-governance, they're going to come back to you. Instead of making a mistake, they're going to say, hey, I need some clarity on this facet so we can move forward.
Yeah, when you look at people who've come from another organization, they come into your organization, they may not have ever seen that. They've never been given that kind of freedom before. They don't know how to deal with it. What's the trick here? Is it so that you can take credit for everything? We want to take responsibility for things. We want to take ownership for everything that happens badly, and we want to promote others for doing well. So if the project fails, I take responsibility. If the project does well, I give you all the credit that I possibly can. So quit trying to control others, right? That's the hardest thing we do. When we think about this, it's not how am I trying to control, it's when. It's happening all the time. We're always doing this, whether it's our kids or our spouse or employees. Reality is, there's only three things in life we can control. Three things. The first thing we can control is whom we trust. This is the fundamental decision you will make in your life. The fundamental decision of life is, whom do I trust? If I trust that God is in control, if I trust God and I know He's in control, boy, things get a whole lot easier for me. When I realize I can't control circumstances, I can't control people, God can. God is in control. Who do I trust? Do I trust God or do I trust someone other than God? As Christians, this is the fundamental decision of life. And we can also decide who we trust in our own lives to share truth with us. How important it is to have someone come shoulder to shoulder in your walk through life and be that person that will share truth with you and recognize that they're trying to serve you and not take it offensively. Really, really important. The second thing we get to control is our attitude or perspective. Same thing. We control how we view things. Now, this is going to be heavily influenced by the first item we get to control. Do I trust God or someone other than God? If I believe God is in control, how's that going to affect my attitude or my perspective? When bad things happen, do I choose to believe, hey, God's got me where I am for a reason? If I start thinking that way, then I start asking questions like, what am I supposed to be learning here right now? Instead of, poor me, I'm a victim. I start thinking about, how can I serve others through this? How can I be a better example for others and influence others to get there through my example of how to deal with this adversity I'm going through? Because God's got me where I am for a reason. It's not a bad thing. It's an opportunity. Item number one, do I trust God or someone other than God? Is going to affect my attitude. And that's going to affect the third and final thing that we actually get to control, which is my actions. If I believe God's in control, that's going to give me a better attitude about how I see things. And how I see things is going to affect my actions. If I get stuck in traffic and I believe God's in control, I'm there for a reason. Why am I here? Maybe it's to serve the people stuck in the cars next to me. And that's going to be my actions that come from that perspective.
And the control facets also go back to the we there, me there. You know, it's whom do we trust? God? Are we serving God and others, the we there, or are we serving me and trusting me?
Oh, good point. That's awesome. Absolutely. You know, you can see this in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. And this is Jesus talking. He says, judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look at the plank as in your own eye? Hypocrite. First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. What he's saying here, he's helping us see that we often observe what needs to be fixed in others very easily. It's really easy for us to see what's wrong with other people. However, the problem is that what we see as something minor in others is something we actually miss in our own current reality. It's usually the plank in our own eye. If I see the speck in your eye, Chris, usually I'm seeing flaws that I have in myself, but they're on a much grander scale. We see it, something wrong in you is something even more wrong in me. So instead of focusing on controlling and fixing others, focus on controlling the three things that we can control. If you want to affect change, start by changing yourself. Start by being a good example of what right looks like. When we look back at the story of the 20th Maine on Little Round Top there, Colonel Chamberlain defending Little Round Top, we can see this tool come into play very, very nicely. When the 20th Maine encountered those 13 sharpshooters who were deserting, he could have easily had them shot. Instead, he chose a different course. He gave them a choice. He told them they could go back to Maine or they could come with his unit to Little Round Top. But he went a step further. He gave them very clear expectations. He told them if they went with the unit to Little Round Top, they had to fight. If they went into battle, they had to fight. If they chose not to fight, then they needed to leave. What would have happened, do you think, if Chamberlain would have just told them, hey, you guys are coming with us. We're going to force you to come along. You're deserters, and you don't deserve any better. Well, as soon as those first rounds were fired on that hill, they would have run away. And we know from the story that those 13 sharpshooters played a critical role in defending that hilltop. And had they not been there, history may have gone very differently for this country. That battle on Little Round Top would have probably been lost. Had Little Round Top fallen to the Confederates? Well, Gettysburg would have potentially been lost. And that would have either prolonged the Civil War, with the cost of lives being even greater, or could have gone the other way completely and lost the war. So we see Chamberlain's example here. He understood the simple truth. He understood that you cannot control others. Because of his understanding and application of this principle, he was able to complete his mission and change history. When we understand God is in control, it affects our attitude and our perspective, especially when things in our life seem difficult. When we have the attitude that God has us where he wants us for a reason, it affects our actions that we take. When you see yourself making poor choices, it's usually as a result of poor perspective. When you have a poor perspective, it usually is a result of not trusting God. So this goes the opposite way. If I trust God, I have a good attitude. If I have a good attitude, I have good actions. So if we see ourselves having poor actions, it's probably because we have a bad attitude, and it's probably because the current reality, the truth of the situation, is I'm not trusting God with what I should be trusting him with. So the Freedom V, it's a good tool, a great tool, to move our children from selfish little creatures to good adults, capable of making good decisions on their own. That's a great there for your kids, Chris. I want my child to be a good adult, capable of making good decisions on their own. Doesn't mean they will. It means they're capable. They still have a choice. So we want to put these structures in place to grow them up, to teach them what freedom and control are all about, and that when they cross the boundary, we follow through with the consequences. We build that coercive power, and we use that referent, reward, and expert power through our own example of how to do life right to keep them in the Freedom V. The three things we can control helps us understand that we cannot control others. We can only control ourselves. If we try to control others, they actually end up controlling us. That's kind of another great dichotomy here. I want to control you, but somehow you end up controlling me. Well, that sounds kind of strange, but reality of it is when I try to control you and your actions don't do what I want them to do, I'm the one that feels bad. You could care less. I'm the one that feels the angst and the anger, and I'm the one that gets emotional. Your lack of action or the action that's gone a different way than I wanted it to is actually controlling me. So when we try to control others, we end up being controlled. We cannot control others.
It's interesting. I had a friend make the comment. He had said something that seemed kind of offensive, and that may have been true, and his perspective may not have been true, but he said, you know, you have the choice to be offended or not. That's a great truth of, we can either allow somebody else's action to control how we think, or we can have self-governance even in that facet.
Understanding where we are in the freedom view with respect to ourselves helps us understand our current reality just a little bit better. Knowing how self-governed we are in different areas of our lives can help us know where we may need more structure for ourselves or with others. So this is a great tool. It's just the letter V. You can draw it on the back of a napkin when you see somebody struggling with this. You sit down and help them see the current reality of where they really are, that maybe they're giving themselves too broad of a freedom V. They need more structure. Or maybe when they're raising their children, they need to have more structure, that they've got their kids in the upside down V. How can I apply this to serve others? And how can I apply this to set a better example in my life? Who am I trying to control? I can't control others. I got to trust God. It's going to affect my attitude. It's going to affect my actions. When we do these and we put these together well with all the other tools that we've talked about so far, man, we can really live life differently. We can start living life a little bit better in the way God intended us to live life. So thanks for listening. I hope you find this tool helpful. And if you really like the podcast or you want to see things done differently, we have a Facebook page. Just go to Servant Leadership on Facebook, make a comment, drop a question. We'll try to answer it here on the podcast. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to offer feedback to any of the Servant Leadership podcasts, please go to our Facebook page and click on the comment section. You can also check us out online at trueservantleadership.com. Our site will soon have videos for the tools that we recommend using, and we will be adding additional content to the website in the future, including links for these podcasts. All of our material comes from the book Servant Leadership, Influencing Others to Get There by Leading a Transformational Life. If you're interested in the book, you can find it at Amazon.com. Both the paperback and the electronic version are available for order. The electronic version is only $1.99, and all of the proceeds from the book go to charity. Thanks for listening, influencing others to get there, serving others, and most of all, thanks for leading with the example of a transformational life set by our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.